Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome. Your cat just tagged me, man.
He does that.
Just all of a sudden, I get tagged off to the side and he runs away.
He does that. You deal with it. And you move on. That's what you do.
You know what you do? You move on to adamandeve.com.
That's right.
I did the promo last week. You do it this week.
Okay. All right. Fine. You go to adamandeve.com. You pick out the product or products that you like and want. Anything from movies to lingerie to butt plugs to dildos to masturbators. You name it. It's on there. You at the very end, it'll ask for a promo code. If you put in the promo code STATIC, S-T-A-T-I-C.
Good, you know how to spell it.
I've been practicing. put in the promo code STATIC. You get 50% off of your one item. Or if you have multiple items, you get 50% off the most expensive item. Also, free shipping within the U.S. 3 free DVDs. And a special mystery gift. So mysterious.
It's a mystery. Exactly. Now, I told this story. I talked about a little bit about this with Charlie McMullen only for a couple of minutes on a What the Fuck episode. But, okay, Scott, I was at Barnes & Noble with Hank Carlson.
Okay, I'm sorry.
And all of a sudden, you know, we're looking at the magazines and I pick up the new copy of Adbusters.
Sure.
You're familiar with that magazine?
No.
Okay, it's a counterculture magazine.
Okay.
And Hank kind of had the same reaction. He's like, what is that? I said, it's a counterculture magazine. And Hank brought up a very good point. There's still a counterculture?
Well,
and
yeah.
I kind of paused for a second and went, kinda?
Yeah, there is.
So I want to talk to you about what happened with counterculture. What happened to it? I'm afraid that it became the hipster movement.
Kind of, sort of did.
That scares me a little bit, Scott.
Kinda, sort of a little bit, but not really. I mean, culture changed. Therefore, counterculture has to change. It's the way of the world. When you say counterculture movement, I'm guessing if we go back to the 60s, and especially the year 1968, the year that changed the world.
Yeah, the year Night of the Living Dead came out.
Exactly. Whatever.
Don't roll your fucking eyes at me with
freak.
That. I'm a movie nerd. What do you want?
Okay. When I mention counterculture and you think 1968, you're thinking hippies, anti-war protesters,
anti-establishment,
anarchists, stuff like that. Well, yeah, those people are still around. They're old.
Yeah, they're old, burnt-out hippies now.
Yeah, I know. They're old, and the pot's kind of gone to their brain, but they're still around. Counterculture is still here. I don't see what the big deal is.
Okay, I mean modern counterculture.
Oh, modern counterculture. Of course.
Because, like, you know, in the 80s, you had a lot of bands, especially the real, true punk movement was very counterculture.
Of course.
I mean, you had the stuff that Jello Biafra was doing, very counterculture.
Yeah, 70s and 80s, it was...
It was huge. And by definition, it was not only underground, but it was also, you know, away from the mainstream, non-mainstream. Now I seem to have noticed that counterculture's gone mainstream.
No. No.
I figured you'd disagree.
Okay. In the 70s and 80s, you had that counterculture movement of the punk movement. The true anarchists that really embraced
it. And it wasn't just music. You had it in comic books.
Yeah.
You had it in books. You had it in...
The zines back then, and stuff like that.
The then burgeoning home video market. You had a lot of counterculture philosophy basically vomited onto the scene through the videotapes.
The good old anarchist cookbook.
Yeah, things like
you
that.
Know,
so
like
it,
that.
Well, I just want to say to the audience that we're not just talking about the music, that the 70s and 80s were a big time... For the counterculture movement in and
for
of itself.
For that counterculture movement, yes. However, in the 90s, a new counterculture took over, and a new counterculture has since, in especially in the last 10 years, has become mainstream, and I think that is the nerd counterculture.
I'm not really sure nerd I would really consider a counterculture.
Oh, yes.
They've always really been part of culture.
No.
Not counterculture.
No, they've been counterculture. I mean, if you think about it, it was always the jocks versus the nerds, right? And you had the jocks that were expected to move on and do their thing and become big business owners in the suits, and they would always be the alpha males and et cetera. And you had the nerds back working with the cogs of society. And that counterculture in the information age deals with the underground of the information age. It's still out there. It's still being traded. I talked about it a little bit when I talked about Tor networks and the underground internet.
Right.
It is still very much alive, and there are still lots and lots of anarchists and anti-establishment individuals speaking out in the internet underground. It's in the 60s and the 70s, the counterculture kind of came out of the closet, so to speak. They came out and they started speaking out. They got very, very loud. They have quieted down, but they're still out there and they still roam the underground hallways. Zines are still published online. You've still got plenty of...
No, you still have zines that are published on paper.
Well, I know that.
I mean, but you know, you're aware of the 2010 Revenge of Print movement, right?
Yes.
You know, there are still a lot of... There's more zines now than there had been in the previous 5 years.
Right.
Because of the Revenge of Print movement.
But you also have to understand that the underground, the true anarchy movement... I think in the 90s, they realized that, wait a minute, we're coming into the information age. We're coming into an age where you've got individuals really running the cogs, and the cogs being code, and the cogs being, you know, all of that computer infrastructure that everything is based on now. The best way to be a counterculture is to get to know that stuff and to work from within on the cogs. So that, you know, hackers, hacktivists... There's your counterculture. You want a hub of counterculture that hit it in the mainstream in a very unfortunate way, but it's out there. You know, prior to the memes taking over and the stupidity taking over, you had the random board on 4chan. That's your counterculture.
And see, that's what I'm afraid of became kind of the hipster part of it. Because I saw a report maybe a year or so ago when the pedo bear first made its way into mainstream culture, okay? And they were talking about how the pedo bear is a counterculture mascot. And I'm going, God damn it! No, it's not! You know, and that pissed me off that idiotic, fucking disgusting meme of the pedo bear is now labeled with the same counterculture that I like to align myself with. That was an attack on me and my ideals.
No, it's not. No, it's not. And pedo bear is not aligned with that counterculture that you align
yourself
with.
It is in the mainstream. When the mainstream looks at what the counterculture is, they see no difference between the kind of stuff you and I do to, oh, the pedo bear, they make fun of kids being diddled.
Ah, but they do. I don't think anybody in their right mind could listen to our show and go, yes, these guys are definitely endorsers of pedophilia. No, we're not. And I realize that pedo bear isn't either. He's kind of become a joke, but that's part of counterculture. Is counterculture, just like culture has splintered, and just like thanks to the internet, you can really get down to your narrow. If you love football, you can just absolutely immerse yourself in football. And I don't care if you're in England and talking about what we call soccer, or whether you're here in what, you know, like Green Bay Packers. You can really immerse yourself in Packers if you want. Counterculture has done the same thing. It's splintered. You've got the anarchists who say, I want to go after blah corporation or blah set of corporations. They can really immerse themselves in that, find one another, and work as a group to really achieve their goals. Or you can find this is really sad, but the mainstream side of counterculture is the memes that have been going around all over the place.
But then on another note, and I thought of this, that counterculture, my ideals that I always considered myself counterculture, and it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. either I refused to change as society did, or I changed as I got older. An example would be, and I can't remember if I talked about this on the show or if just you and I talked about it. I was watching Animal House on cable. Okay?
Okay.
And I found myself against the Deltas. Okay, these people are committing numerous felonies. They have no respect for public or private property. They are complete sexist. They don't want to learn. They are dragging down the learning experience of people who actually have a future. And I went, what happened to me? What? I used to be on the side of the Deltas. Now I see that they are wrong.
You got
did culture
old.
Change or did I change?
You changed. You got old.
Seriously. But I mean, seriously, I actually was worried when I'm watching this and I'm going, that guy's a scumbag and he just committed three felonies. Yeah. One of them a sex crime.
But today you show Animal House to the right college students. I'm not saying all college students, but you show it to the right college students and they're going to be like, yeah, we want our house to be like that. Woo! And then you show it to them 10 years later when they're all lawyers and doctors or whatever the hell they become. And they're like, those were good days, but I was an idiot.
or like, okay, they all would have been arrested for all, right. You know, the numerous felonies and right. property damage and right. rapes that they yes. committed.
Yes.
But I mean, that's why I'm saying, I don't know if my ideals changed or if the entire ideals themselves changed. Because like, I really... I mean, you've seen the rants I've gone on Facebook and on my shows and that, and even on this
yes,
show.
Yes, I have.
That, you know, I'm very anti-corporate and all that, but at the same time, we look for sponsors. Is that kind of a mixed message?
It's kind of a mixed message, but again, look at who we've found as sponsors.
AdamandEve.com. Use the promo code STATIC.
Exactly.
I'm not going to pass up a shot.
We've got Adam and Eve, and we've got Amazon, both very, very liberal companies.
Yes.
And so we look for the right sponsors. And I think that's where the ideals have changed.
Well, because see, somebody...
And hang on. This is where your counterculture has changed. I think this is really a huge base of it. Instead of... You've got that 1960s, 1970s, 1980s ideal of tear down the corporation. And that's how it was for three decades. Almost four. You know, tear down the corporation, damn the man.
Right.
Party on, let's play with the music. I think that now the counterculture is not tear down the corporation, but infiltrate the corporation. Change the corporation. You and I have said it many, many times when we talk about the older generation, when we talk about the baby boomers that are now in control, and we look at them and we go, look, you have fucked this country beyond all belief. And let's face it, the United States is one gigantic corporation. The government is a big corporation.
Yeah.
And those that are running it right now and have run it since 2000, screwed it, messed it up badly. And
thank you, George Bush and President Obama.
Yeah. And so me as a almost 40-year-old dude, I'm looking at it and I'm going, well, I'm not going to tear down the United States government, so let's infiltrate it. Let's change it. If we can't, if you can't change your people, change your people.
Well, I mean, like, recently, and by recently, I mean a few months ago, somebody sent me an email and bitched at me that I'm a hypocrite, that I rail against commercialism, I rail against advertising while I have Adam and Eve as a sponsor. He's like, you are nothing but a fucking hypocrite.
Yeah, I kind of agree with him. I see where he's coming from.
You know, but the way I look at it is, and you know, I've said this numerous times, to me, there is a cost of doing business and then there is a selling out. And I'm not trying to turn this into a selling out debate again, but to us having an advert. Now, if it was Adam and Eve Presents Lost in the Static and every 13 minutes we had an Adam and Eve promo, okay, then we're getting into hypocritical territory.
Right.
I think a quick promo at the beginning of the show or an occasional joke when we bring it right. up, I do not think that's hypocritical for me still being against commercialism.
See, and I don't know. I really don't. And to me, it's Ford... and Apple and McDonald's and KFC can advertise anywhere. And they fit. I mean, you know, who doesn't like fried chicken? If you don't like fried chicken, you're a weirdo, because fried chicken is yummy. And so I can understand where KFC can kind of get their advertising in anywhere. And they can be a nice, conservative, family-centered company. Hobby Lobby bases, you know, they pride themselves on being a Christian hobby store filled with Halloween shit all the time. Don't get it. But nonetheless, you know, they pride themselves on being a Christian corporation. And so they can kind of fit in. Adam and Eve is a liberal, sex-positive corporation. They're the counterculture. They're the ones that seriously, I think at least sexually, Adam and Eve, ExtremeRestraints.com, and a bunch of places that are online only are leading the charge in this sexual counterculture and what I think will eventually become a sexual revolution of it's okay. and so we choose to side ourselves with them, where Adam and Eve, outside of podcasting, doesn't do a whole lot of advertising. You see it late night on TV every once in a while. Yeah. But let's face it, they're, you know, it's you're never going to, you know, thanks for watching Fox Animation Domination on Sunday night.
Brought to you by AdamandEve.com. Brought to you by
AdamandEve.com. It's never going to happen. And so they're kind of part of the counterculture, being a corporation that says, look, this is how we feel.
But do you consider me a hypocrite for having Adam and Eve on two of my three shows and still railing against commercialism? I mean, I know it comes to that thin line between, like we talked about before, selling out and cost of doing business.
Yeah. I mean, I think not just with Adam and Eve, I think with a couple of other things, and I hate it when you put me on a spot like this because if you had asked me...
Because you're not going to bullshit me, so that's why.
If you had asked me earlier in the week, Scott, give me examples of when I'm being hypocritical, I would have had a line up for you. And if I had the chance to walk up there and ask Dawn, hey, when was Josh being hypocritical? She'll just be like, oh, here and here and this date and this line and these words and blah, blah, blah. And
she doesn't like me to begin with. So.
No, it's not that she doesn't like you. It's that
I bugged the shit out of her.
Yeah, it's not that she doesn't like you as a person. It's that she doesn't like a lot of your hypocrisy.
I don't consider myself a
hypocrite. I think you are. I think in many cases you are. Like I said, if you're putting me on the spot and asking me for examples and give me time, and I will present you with a 20-page paper on it next week. But, you know, right now it's not coming to brain.
To brain, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, but then how about this? How about when the counterculture becomes mainstream, do you think that's because the people that were in the counterculture grew up? For example, how the Ramones and Dead Kennedys music was very counterculture, and now you're hearing them in commercials for cell phones. Is that, and we're not going to talk about whether the band sold out or not, because usually they don't own the music.
I'm not going to deal with it.
But, right. But do you think that that's now acceptable?
That is
because the counterculture is now the buying audience for the cell phone?
That is precisely what happens to every counterculture. The when we're talking about the 60s and the 70s counterculture, the ones in there, those are the baby boomers. Those are the ones that at the time were railing against their wartime, God bless America, you know,
because they're the ones that they're the ones that were born and were kids right post World War II.
Exactly. And they're the ones that were rallying against all of this old conservative ideas back then. Now they've grown up and they've become the old conservative ideas.
They had their Animal House epiphany I did.
Exactly. They had their Animal House epiphany. They've moved up. They've become the old conservative ideas. And in cases of neocons and stuff like that, even more whacked out, weird ass, right wing fucking scary ass conservative ideas.
There is some else I want to bring up, but I'll let you.
Okay. And yes, they've changed, but they still like to think of themselves as that teenager back in the 50s and 60s and liking that music that they listen to in commercials now and enables companies like Viagra to sell to them.
Or when you see something like, you know, on a Family Guy or The Simpsons, a background character that's got a Dead Kennedys t-shirt, you just kind of go, oh, your heart sinks a little bit, and then part of you goes, kind of cool that they're a Dick Kennedy's fan, too, exactly. You know? I mean, so it's kind of, you know, oh, cool, and oh, at the same time.
That's because you realize that, okay, you're trying to suck me in by, it's almost... It's
pandering, almost.
It's not really pandering. I would say pulling at the nostalgia strings.
Okay.
Because part of my brain will always believe that I'm, you know, it's the 90s, I'm back in college, I'm doing my thing, and I could show up at any university and I would be just as young and hip and as accepted as I was back then.
Dude, you wouldn't be Rodney Dangerfield and back to school, man.
You know, I know, but that's the thing. Like, one of our fans, Emily, is going to college right now up in Canada, and I know damn well if I went up there and hit her university, everybody would be looking at me like,
who's grandpa?
What is the old dude doing here, and who's the kids he's coming to visit, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, the counterculture grew up and became the culture, but that's the thing. A new counterculture has arisen from it, and what you say it kind of sucks, but not me. I think that the nerd counterculture, I mean, you want to talk about... Look at your cyberpunk authors. Look at hackers back in the 90s.
Like we talked about last week.
Yeah. Like we talked about last week. Hackers is a perfect counterculture movie. Even The Matrix. Matrix is a counterculture movie.
I would fight you on that one. Well, speaking of movies, then what about movies that preach the counterculture to the mainstream and then become the mainstream, like Fight Club? Fight Club is absolutely a counterculture movie.
Yes.
Yet, not only has mainstream acceptance, you know, Tyler Durden t-shirts and all that, kind of like all the all the people who were not part of the target audience initially seem to have missed the point of what something like Fight Club was about. It was anti-commercial, but I believe it was Fox, 20th Century Fox. They said, we're commercializing, you know, or even the Jim Carrey, The Grinch That Stole Christmas. The whole point of that movie is anti-commercialism and that you don't need material possessions to enjoy the spirit of Christmas.
But here, so they commercialize, Happy Meal,
they commercialize the living shit out of it. Is that just me noticing a hypocrisy in business, or is that culture itself, like with Fight Club, people that really don't get what Tyler Durden in the movie was talking about or trying to achieve, going, yeah, Tyler Durden says.
Another perfect example of that is the Che Guevara cheat t-shirts that we see everywhere.
Oh my, yeah, that is so stupid.
But that's going to happen to anything. I mean, the idea of the hippie nowadays has become a novelty. And yeah, you still see the smiley, the yellow smiley from
the 80s.
70s and 80s.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that has now become a commercial commodity. The keep on truckin' dude, the bears from Grateful Dead.
Yep.
They're commercial commodities now. And that's just what happens to counterculture symbols. Eventually, and I hate to say it, but I saw one example of something that started out as a counterculture meme that became a commercial commodity overnight. And that was Tard, the Grumpy Cat.
Oh, Grumpy Cat. Okay.
Yeah, Grumpy Cat. I mean, adorable little kitty that just looks constantly grumpy and is always saying no. And all of a sudden...
He's in TV commercials.
They're on the Today Show. They're in TV commercials. It's become a commercial commodity. Any counterculture that grows up eventually becomes mainstream. That's the nature of growing up. Your parents die. You take over the world.
Well, do you think it's fair the way culture, the mainstream culture, especially the mainstream media, tries to lump the most negative aspects of counterculture, and they've done this since the 70s, so this is not a new thing, it's just more prevalent now, to counterculture, such as the tinfoil hat conspiracy nuts, because Fox News likes to label like Alex Jones as a counterculture leader. Okay, Alex Jones does not represent most of today's counterculture, but he is the most extreme example, and they can use him to do his, you know, 1876 will happen all over again rant as, these people are crazy, you don't listen to their ideas.
Yeah, and they've done that since time immemorial.
Right. Do you think that's fair, or do you even consider the tinfoil hat conspiracy nuts? Or, and we're not going to get into a gun debate, but like all these people that every time there's a shooting, oh, Obama did it to try and get sympathy so he can take away our guns. There are people that really believe this.
I know.
And do you think they really are counterculture, or are they just fucking crazy?
They really are counterculture. Now, hang on. Don't fight me on, because I know that look. You were looking at me like you're ready to pounce. So let me finish my point first. Number one, they really are a counterculture. And you have to understand that because of the speed of information today, we no longer have one counterculture movement. We have lots and lots of little ones. They are a counterculture movement. They are outside of the mainstream, and frankly, in my opinion, they're all knucking futs.
Absolutely.
Every single one of them is scary. I mean, and I've got a couple in my family that live and die by the words of Glenn Beck and Alex Jones. And they're outside the mainstream. They want to get their views of point across. They are a counterculture. But, and I think that anyone of the modern era, in the modern era, anyone under 50 realizes that if you sit down and talk to two adults like you and I, who are arguably also members of a counterculture.
Right.
And they go, you're in with Alex Jones. I think anybody with half a brain would go, no. I don't even subscribe to the dude on Ancient Aliens, Giorgio Tsoukalos.
Look, he's, I'm not saying it's aliens.
Nuts too.
But it's aliens.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's, I didn't hear the question, but the answer is aliens. I sounded a little Al Pacino there, didn't I? Hoo-bah.
You're a cockroach.
But nonetheless, I always like Son of a Woman Al Pacino a little bit better than
Scarface. I always like the, you know, we're not going to spend too much time on it. I always like the thing about Scarface that it's all about Cubans, and almost every main character is Cuban. Every single one is a white Italian actor. Yeah, I just love that. I just absolutely love that.
But nonetheless, I mean, yes, Alex Jones and his little tinfoil hat people and the conspiracy theorists out there and the people that watch Zeitgeist and go, oh my God, this is the greatest movie ever made and it's completely factual from beginning to end. though they are a counterculture, they are also wackos.
And I would also lump in there the monster hunters, the ghost hunters. I mean, I'm sorry, but I'm not saying if you didn't want to believe what you want to believe, okay? I'm not saying that.
Right.
I'm saying you people are not a fair representation of the counterculture, but no. The mainstream likes to use them.
Oh, they love to use them, and they have... I mean, they have for forever. They really have.
You know why, man? Because it's a conspiracy, man.
Oh, God. Your average hippie, your average counterculture member of the 60s and the 70s didn't agree with Jello Biafra with everything he had to say. Your average counterculture person didn't agree with him. But who was held up as the example?
Okay, then what about... And now, I forgot about this before. When you're talking about movies,
yes.
Do you know what the first true subliminal counterculture movie was?
What?
Night of the Living Dead. As George Romero said, it's literally a new counter society coming up and literally swallowing the old society whole.
There you go.
He said that's what he meant with that movie. Kind of gives you a new symbolism for that, doesn't it?
It really does. Because
now that you think about it, you go... That is a true counterculture message, isn't it?
It's
you don't think of a zombie movie as a counterculture film, but it is.
No, you think of it as a damnation of biological warfare or something like that. And
or as Mr. Plunkett likes to say it, you might not have noticed it, but your brain did.
Yeah, you know.
I'm sorry, I like Mr. Plunkett. I think he's funny.
He's good. I like
it. I think the Red Letter Media guys are fucking hilarious. And they're from Milwaukee, too. We should hook up with them at some point.
Yeah, we should. I don't know if hookup's the right word, but we should get in touch with them.
Crossover.
There you go.
Okay. But it just, you know, like Hank's initial statement of there's still a counterculture that, you know, magazines like Adbusters.
He's right and he's wrong.
You know, they are so far out of the mainstream now that they are, yes, counterculture, but they're almost irrelevant. And I hate to say that.
But, and here, here's the difference. Here is why in the 60s and the 70s, the counterculture rose up and got a voice. It's because they had all of the different movements. Number one, the hippie movement was really, really appealing. Coming out of that post-war era.
Free love, free drugs.
Yeah, free love, free drugs, experiment, enjoy what you are and who you are. And, you know, you even had a counterculture within that counterculture of the Christian hippies. You know, we don't really do the drugs. We're not into the free love thing, but we sure do like flowers.
Well, and even in the same era, you had the...
But the reason that this one counterculture kind of swallowed up a bunch of others and got a voice was because they had such a powerful and...
Pervasive
enemy. And they had a powerful and pervasive enemy in Richard Nixon and in the Vietnam War.
Well, and then you also had a sort of spin-off anti-hippie movement of the, you know, we can't deny this, and I'm not being racist, but the black counterculture with, like, the Black Panthers and that.
And again...
And that very much was a counterculture, but it was almost the militant opposite of what the hippies were.
And you had two versions of that. You had the peaceful black protesters that followed Martin Luther King. And then you had the Malcolm X and the Black Panther crowd.
Yeah, and that was very much counterculture, and it still is with the new Black Panther Party and shit. Yes. Technically,
yeah, and it's still around, and it rose up at the same. You know, all of these things came together. We had the Vietnam War we were fighting against. We had segregation they were fighting against.
The civil rights movement really ramping up.
Civil rights movement really ramping up, and so you had all of these different countercultures really coming to light. And yes, recently we've had a lull. But if you don't, I mean, hippies have been around since the 40s.
See, I actually thought we would have a rebirth a couple of years ago. I really thought Occupy Wall Street was kind of a rebirth of, I hate to say it, but the 80s style counterculture. That really was an 80s, 70s, 80s style counterculture. That just kind of petered out.
It was a spark of what we saw in the 60s.
Yeah, that's why I was like, yeah, and then it just didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah, people got jobs.
Reality slunk in.
Yeah, reality hit hard, but it was a spark, and I think that it was. I mean, there was a spark like that of anti-war protests. Up until 1941. There were anti-war protests going on in the U.S. until 1942.
Well, and you had the anti-war protests for the Iraq and Afghan wars during Bush's administration,
I realize that. But, I mean, you know, you think back to World War II, and you think that is something that everybody and their brother in America stood behind our fighting boys. The
Americana kind of thing.
And it was this grand thing. No, there was a counterculture, anti-war feeling. There was a Nazi Bund in Chicago, for God's sake. A huge one. Big old Nazi party around again until 1942. Then it kind of petered out for some reason.
I think it had something to do with Hitler's suicide?
No, because Hitler didn't commit suicide 44. Until 44.
Yeah, that's right.
But I think it had something to do with the war effort and with the FBI, well, the OSS at the time, kind of breathing down their neck. But nonetheless,
whenever you say OSS, I just think of Brock Sampson.
I know. But, you know, you look at this stuff, and there was a counterculture back then, and there were sparks of it during World War II, sparks of this anti-war protests and tiny little bits that we kind of saw in Occupy. That was a spark. That was not a flame. That was a spark.
Yeah.
And it was a good size spark, don't get me wrong.
It was more of an ember.
But I think that eventually, and especially, you know, I think especially had Mitt Romney been voted in.
I'm sorry, just the thought of that is funny.
Yeah, I know. But if we see this new conservative and this far-right conservative Tea Party ever come to a point of real power, that's when we're going to see countercultures coalesce again. See, that's the problem with countercultures.
What the hell
was that? That was somebody messaging me on Facebook. that's what they really need is a common enemy to coalesce against.
All right, then what about something like the former counterculture poster children, if you will, or even just those who brought new ideas, people we've spoken about before, such as Hunter S. Thompson, Malcolm McLuhan. What was the one you brought up? It was the guy you countered Malcolm McLuhan with.
I'm not sure, but
died of cyanide poisoning. I don't remember.
I don't remember. I apologize. It's my brain is not functioning.
Like how Hunter S. Thompson went from being the counterculture writer to, as he got older, and his writing didn't really change stylistically or even content wise all that much. It just became irrelevant by the 90s. You know?
Yeah.
Is that because of the culture itself, or just the message only resonated in the 70s when, you know, the message didn't age?
The message didn't age. The message became irrelevant. Because, again, you had that generation of people growing up and getting into power and dealing with things, and that generation that listened, that really, truly listened to Hunter S. Thompson and stood behind what he said, they got the money. They got the power. They took over. And in today's corporate societies, they took some ideas from Hunter S. Thompson with them. And so his message didn't change. And so he's no longer counterculture. He's culture.
Well, and do you think the same thing happened in the film world? From, you had the real counterculture filmmakers, like, and I despise this man's films, but you had like the Nick Zeds, who were, we're making true art film, man, shot on videotape, no budget, no script, man. And now that everybody's doing that, everybody, because it's digital, is sort of democratized film. Is someone like Nick Zed just irrelevant now?
In order to get a message out on film, you no longer have to be part of the Hollywood machine. Like you said, it's been democratized. But in order to get a message out on film, you have to have two things. One, a good message.
And I think that's one of the big things most independent films lack today.
What I mean by a good message is not, it's not the content of the message. It is the content of the message that matters, but it has to be a message that resonates with people. I can't go out here on the streets of Wisconsin and scream about what a crappy state California is and have it resonate with citizens of Wisconsin. Nobody's going to be like, yeah, California sucks. That's why we live here. Get your snowmobile. Let's go. It's not going to resonate. So you have to have a good message that resonates with a lot of people. And the other thing that you have to have, and this is the downside of democratizing film, is you have to have a good film, a good watchable film.
You have to
have
talent.
You don't even have to have talent. You have to have good, watchable film.
Yeah, because Nick Zed didn't have talent.
You look at all of this stuff on YouTube, and there's a lot of people on YouTube who make very watchable stuff that have no talent. And it's like watching a train wreck. And you just, you can't peel away. And that's what you need to
watchable. Did you just
put
Don LaFontaine with your voice there for a
second? Did I? I didn't need to. In a world where YouTube,
yeah, because all of a sudden you're like, and you can't look away.
Yeah,
it's like, okay, Don.
I didn't mean to. It's the throat gods are with me today, apparently. But
do you think something like, and now, yes, this was released by Universal and it was technically a mainstream movie, but the mainstream didn't get it. Like Videodrome, very counterculture movie,
very
almost a definition of a counterculture video movie.
Yes.
Do you think if the same kind of movie was made, do you think there is a Videodrome just waiting to be made in the modern era? Or do you think Videodrome's message of technology literally overtaking you, has that gone away with time? Has Videodrome become an artifact of the 1982?
Videodrome has become an artifact of 1982. The message of Videodrome has not. Because especially as we are on the brink of literally putting machines inside of ourselves for recreational purposes.
Well, like that guy that got the iPod installed in his arm?
Yeah. Well, not just that, but I'm talking about things like being chipped. Something as simple as being chipped and being able to be tracked using radio frequency ID and stuff like
that. Now we're getting into conspiracy territory again.
Well, no, we're not. We're getting into research territory that they're actually doing. There are professors out there that are chipped, and they walk into a room and the lights are set where they want, and the radio is set where they want, and the computer is fired up to the programs they want to run. That's a reality. And so this message of be careful, don't lose yourself in technology is very relevant. I mean, that was one of the many messages that people like Bruce Sterling had in their cyberpunk novels.
Well, do you think that Videodrome has become more relevant today than it was in 82?
No. Like I said, the film itself is irrelevant. And
I will never let you call that film irrelevant. You know how much I love that movie.
The film itself is irrelevant. It's a very good film. Don't get me wrong. But
I think it's a genius film.
But in itself, that film is irrelevant, because if you want to carry that message to an audience of today, you're going to have to get a lot smarter. You're, instead of using the way out there biology meets the videotape weird stuff that kind, you know, like shoving a videotape in your belly, you're not going to be able to do stuff like that. You're going to have to become a little bit more scientifically accurate. I think that your audience has gotten smarter, and that's both good and bad.
Well, then what do you think is staying on the same Videodrome thing? That long stalled, and I hope never fucking happens, remake of Videodrome that they've been trying to make for years. And they basically, all they wanted was the title. Because they said this new one is about nanites and the internet influencing your brain. And I'm going, okay, fine. Sounds interesting.
Still the
but
same
it's
message.
Not Videodrome.
But it's still the same message. And I think that if they want to get that message across.
I don't think it's the same
message. I think it is. It's technology could fight. If you blur the line between humanity and technology, you could really fuck things up. That's the message. Am I wrong? Wasn't that the message of Videodrome? Or did I get something completely wrong out of it?
I think that was one of the messages. There was a couple in that movie.
Right. I'm going to call that. That was the message that spoke to me. And I think that message can speak today. And I think, you know, if you talk about nano or pico technology and the fact that it really is becoming part of the human body nowadays, if you take it to its next logical leap, yeah, there's still very much a relevant message to be told there. Can it be told with videotapes and making love to TVs? No.
Well, okay, to spin this back into our actual topic, because we kind of went off on technology.
Right.
There. So you think Videodrome's message is still counterculture?
Has
the message become mainstream?
I think that the message itself, messages can be neither counterculture nor mainstream. It's what you do with them. I think the next rise in counterculture that we're going to see, I think the next big leap of counterculture that we're going to see is enhanced human beings, technologically enhanced human beings, better legs, better arms, stronger, you know, this, and I'm talking a century out here.
So are we talking, let's stick with Cronenberg for a second, scanners, leaving aside all the sequels where it's just all about exploding heads. You know, you had, I think it was 237 scanners on the entire planet.
Right.
That was very much a counterculture.
Yes, and it was.
If you really pay attention to that movie, that was his message, that this is a new society that you should fear.
Yes.
Because they are more powerful than you.
Yes.
And you need to, in a way, it's almost an anti-counterculture message.
Almost.
That you go, you need to fear the new culture, but then you look at like Videodrome and The Brood and that, and you go, he's very much on the side of counterculture, so I'm not sure if Scanners was a fluke with that message, or if I just read way too much into what Scanners really was. Maybe he didn't mean any of that, and he just wanted to make a exploding head movie.
Maybe, I don't know. But the point of the message, with Videodrome, the point of the message of don't blur technology and humanity, you've got that one side where you end up with a bunch of people that are more enhanced. And then you have the opposite side. You have the Luddite movement. And I think that's going to very much be again, a new counterculture that we're going to see in the future, you know, where it's...
I mean, hell, me being a VHS and Laserdisc collector, you know, audio cassettes, vinyl, that is counterculture. Because yes. I'm going, you know, everyone else is going, DVD, Blu-ray, download, and I'm going, VHS and beta, bitch.
Yeah, and you're part of that Luddite counterculture where you go, okay, I'm going to... It's like the Amish. The Amish go, we're going to accept technology up until 1862 and then no more, no more. That's good enough. You're saying, I'm going to accept technology up to 1982 and no more. No, that's good enough.
But I also have a Blu-ray player and a computer and a DVD.
I realize that. But if we take the Josh counterculture to the next leap, I mean, can't you see a little subgroup of people going, anything invented after 1980? Don't need it.
I can. I don't subscribe to that. But,
I know you don't. But,
I can. But I just... I don't know, counterculture, it seemed to, or maybe this was just my perception of it at the time, it seemed to have been a more coalesced movement, and it's far more splintered now.
It is, and I agree with you 100%, and I think that's part
of... I'm not sure if that's good or bad, though.
I don't know, and like I said, that's part of what I see is there is no common enemy. You've got the technologically enhanced counterculture, those geeks and nerds that are working at CERN and
the people that get a chubby waiting in line for 3 weeks for the new iPhone.
Well, even more than that, you know, but you've got that side, and then you've got your side, the people that get a chubby waiting for 3 weeks waiting in line for the unreleased golden tape of Videodrome to be
auctioned
off.
Awesome.
You know,
that'd be so awesome.
Exactly. And that's... You're splintered, and the reason you're splintered and the reason counterculture itself is splintered is because it's a whole lot easier with the internet to group up with your little group that you want, and we have no common enemy. Not anymore.
Well, now I'm going to get a little egotistical, not with just me, but with you as well.
Okay.
And with Jillian and Brad and Alex and everybody else, would you consider the... Let's just stick with Jackalope for the moment. The Jackalope to be kind of counterculture to what radio is? Would you consider us a counterculture movement? This show that we're doing right now is kind of counterculture?
Well, let's take NPR out of the equation.
Okay.
Where else are you going to hear people talking about stuff like this?
Sirius.
Okay.
Which Sirius is mainstream as shit. Pretty much.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't have Sirius. I can't speak to it.
I've got it in the car.
Where are you going to get it for free?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. Is what we're doing, is the ideal of podcasting, is that kind of counterculture?
It's both part of culture, but it's kind of counterculture. Listening to them is part of culture and has been since 2005. Making them, I think that anybody with a voice that needs to share, yeah, it's a little bit of a counterculture. But again, it depends on the content of the show and what's going on. It's becoming very, very mainstream.
Okay, then let me segue into another thing since we only got 6 minutes left.
Okay.
Pornography. Pornography is very much, maybe not anymore, as we talked about last week. I think pornography, especially in the 60s and 70s, was very counterculture.
Yes.
Both for those watching it and for those making it.
Yes, yes.
And then pornography eventually, and I'm not making a pun, got swallowed by mainstream culture. I think by the 80s, pornography kind of stopped being counterculture.
Pornography,
for the most part.
And again, those people that were watching pornography... And those people that were exposed to pornography at a younger age and that had maybe some more liberal ideas about it, they grew up. And I think now that pornography is everywhere on the internet...
To me, pornography is totally mainstream.
Now. Yeah. I mean, I agree with you. It's everywhere on the internet.
It's not counterculture at all.
It's not counterculture at all. And I think that as this generation that we're raising right now, that, you know, the two kids that my friend Dan has that are still in single digits, as they grow up... They're going to be like, oh, yeah, porn's not counterculture because look, a click, right? There it is.
Well, then speaking of that, do you think that counterculture changes with the age of awareness, such as those kids that are still in the single digits being aware of something like pornography, where you and I, maybe, you know, we heard about it in hushed whispers, but, you know, back in our day when you had to find a magazine or steal a videotape, you pretty much didn't give a shit about porn until you started going through puberty.
Right.
Nowadays, I know 5-year-olds that know what porno is.
Yeah.
Do you think the age of awareness has changed?
Yes. And I think that in an online world where you can get any information you want at the click of a mouse, the age of awareness is now zero. And that's going to change ideas. That's going to change culture. And it will also change counterculture.
Now, one thing I do want to try and define here, and you'll probably fight with me, is counterculture doesn't necessarily always mean something good. Because to me, there's a big counterculture movement going right now in the parenting world that we don't punish, we don't discipline, we don't spank our kid, we just let them wreck the entire house and they get it out of their system. This is a growing movement.
Yeah, I know.
It's worrying to me that generation's going to grow up into.
Yeah, the everybody gets a ribbon, everybody wins yes. generation.
But that started as counterculture. And
right. It started as Dr. Spock and all of those idiot child psychologists in the 70s, frankly.
But there is a dark, dark side to counterculture, too. Something like NAMBLA.
Yes.
NAMBLA is a counterculture movement, and it's a disgusting one. For those that don't know, it's the National
Man-Boy Love Association.
Yeah, it's about men that love little boys and why it should be okay. It shouldn't be okay. But that is a movement that is still gaining momentum, and that is something else that the mainstream loves to label as counterculture. That, I think, is a dangerous place to go when you start talking NAMBLA area.
Counterculture is something that the mainstream looks at and thinks is strange, out of the ordinary, weird, whether it's good or bad. It is counterculture. It's not good counterculture. It's not healthy counterculture. But it is counterculture. And in the case of NAMBLA, it's psychologically it's damaged.
And it's highly illegal counterculture,
right,
too.
Right.
And that, to me, counterculture was always, and yeah, you could even call potheads counterculture, really, when you get down yes. to what the word is. And you could, because I know somebody would say, well, pot's illegal in most states still. Pot's illegal, and you're saying that counterculture, when it's illegal, should not be equated the same way.
No. You know some, said that.
No, but you know some shithead detractor of mine, because you know they love to try and pick apart the things I say.
Right. And I'm saying right now, we never said that.
No, not at all. But I think counterculture, it hit me like a brick to the face when Hank did that there's still a counterculture. That just hit me like a brick to the face. That it never even dawned on me that he's kind of right.
See, that's when you look at him and you go, well, yeah, there's hundreds of countercultures now.
But I think he was looking at it because he's just a little older than us. Of that same, to him, counterculture is, you know, the Jello Biafras, yeah. the Hunter Thompsons, the hippie movement. I don't think he was thinking on the level of 4chan and things like that.
And that's what I'm saying is I think that counterculture is still very, very much out there. Anonymous is out there. It's just that these countercultures haven't coalesced. They don't have a common enemy. And when they do, we will see another 1968.
And in a weird way, they're more visible now, which makes them less counter,
yes.
I think. Which I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but if you think about it, it does.
But with the internet, they're easier to find. That's a big part of it, too. That's a good and a bad.
Yeah. So on that note, thank you guys for listening. And we want your thoughts. Are we counterculture? I think Scott and I both are on different levels. I think that's a fair assessment.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, we're two different kinds of counterculture right here talking to one another.
And so we want to hear from you. LostInTheStaticShow@gmail.com. We want to hear your thoughts on counterculture, the loss of counterculture, or if you're older, and I'm sorry to keep the younger ones out of this, but if you're older, how you saw it change in your time frame from the counterculture you grew up with to what there is today, especially if you're in our area.
You can either send us an email or hit us on the Facebook group. That's facebook.com/lostinthestatic.
Indeed, which Scott monitors more than I do, but still.
Well, it's there. So,
all right. Good night.
Bye, everybody.